It's 6:20. This is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. The Texas Attorney General's office is cracking down on businesses accused of price gouging during the state of disaster declared during Hurricane Harvey. The Consumer Protection Division says it's notified more than 125 gas stations of their violations, and many of them are in North Texas, where the weather was virtually unaffected by the storm. Customer complaints allege gas stations charged $3.99 or higher for a gallon of unleaded gas or diesel. Attorney General Ken Paxton says the stations will be able to resolve the gouging complaints. Businesses could face civil penalties of up to $20,000 per violation, as well as refund requirements. Renting furniture in Texas could lead to jail time. Texas law allows the state's rent-to-own industry to file criminal charges against Texans who don't pay their debts. That's according to an investigation by the Texas Tribune and personal finance company NerdWallet. The law was written decades ago by rental lobbyists, and it's led to unexpected legal and financial issues for customers. Jay Root is a Texas Tribune investigative reporter. He told Public Radio's Texas Standard the story of one Austin customer who shopped at a furniture store. She thought she had been placed on a payment plan to buy a bedroom set. She signed a contract through a company called Acceptance Now.
She had no idea she was signing a rent-to-own contract. And they have little placards there that say Acceptance Now, you know, build your credit. And Acceptance Now is a division of Rent-A-Center, and they set up shop and Ashley's Furniture and Rooms to Go. And it's true that the contract, and she recognizes this, the contract does say rental purchase agreement, but it's a lot of fine print, and, you know, she just wasn't looking closely enough. And by the time that she did look closely at her contract, it was too late. And she recorded all of her phone calls with these people. So we know for a fact that they threatened to use the Texas Penal Code against her. And they said, we're going to file theft charges against you. Well, she had already paid more than the cash price.
The customer ended up returning the bedroom furniture. An official with Plano-based Rent-A-Center tells the Texas Tribune and NerdWallet that the company pursues criminal charges as a last resort. Following the investigation, state lawmakers are considering legislative reforms. Now to think and identity. Growing up, Brando Skyhorse was taught by his mother to embrace his American Indian heritage. Except, it wasn't real. He's actually Mexican-American. And although Skyhorse learned the truth in his early teens, he kept up the charade for years for a variety of reasons, including the ways other people responded to his true identity. Today on Think, he talked with Chris Boyd about revealing the truth to his high school girlfriend.
So we've been together for about 6 weeks, and I thought, well, you know, I'm clearly going to spend the rest of my life with this person. I might as well come clean and tell her, you know, exactly who I am. And when I told her, I was thinking like, oh, wow, she'll be like, what a great story. It was interesting. You know, I can't believe you shared this with me. But she was like, you know, I'm sorry. We can't be together. It's like, you know, I can be with a white person and I can be with an Asian person, but blacks and Mexicans, no way. I can't do it. It was challenging because in a certain way, it validated my mom's view of the world. Mm. And what a horrible lesson to learn when you're in high school. Oh, your parents were right. And they were right about something that to you seems so black and white, so distinct. Like, this is who I am. I'm Mexican American. I should be able to tell people and not have to be punished because of that. And because I felt I was punished, essentially, I went back in the closet and I kept my mouth shut for another few years, actually.
Brando Skyhorse is an editor of the essay collection We Wear the Mask, 15 True Stories of Passing in America. This episode of Think Rares tonight at 10, and you could subscribe to the podcast at think.kera.org. You've seen them driving along lonely Texas country roads, the bones of towns that time forgot, ghost towns. Yeah, we're joining public radio stations across Texas to bring these ghost towns back to life. Tonight, we head west to Reagan County. In 1923, the Santa Rita No. 1 struck oil about 70 miles west of San Angelo. Boom towns quickly popped up. Some of them are still around. Others, like the town of Best, aren't. A warning, some listeners may find some of the descriptions in this story unsettling. Michael Marks reports.
People used to call Best the town with the best name and the worst reputation. Its history is pretty brief. Best boomed and then busted, all within the mid-1920s. But let's go back to that brief moment. Way back. Back before the movie giant shot one frame in West Texas. Before widespread fracking. Back to 1923, when oil was struck in the Permian Basin. After the Santa Rita discovery, Best was established in July 1924. It was mainly a supply and operations center for the oil field. But that's not all it was. In a letter describing the place years later, former Reagan County Clerk H.L. Puckett wrote,
"There were many undesirable characters moving in during the first few years after discovery of oil, Best in particular experiencing much violence and lawlessness. Most every kind of vice was easily noted by a casual observer."
Blackbird. The boom certainly attracted folks eager to make an honest buck, but also those willing to skirt the rules. Other towns like nearby Texon were explicitly for families and often didn't have housing for single men. But Best had plenty of rooms for boarders, drifters, and general riffraff. There also weren't many police to speak of, and those that were there were ill-prepared for the job. About a year after Best was established, the Taylor family moved to Best from Midland to run the new post office. In those days, that entailed handling a lot of cash, since people would pay for goods that came through the mail, which, Mrs. Wiley Taylor wrote, was a risk in Best.
"We got some heavy money bags made of canvas, and each night I took the money to bed with me, sleeping with it in the crook of my body, turning the bags over with me when I turned, and with a six-shooter under my pillow."
Violent crime and fraud were rampant. Take the local doctor, who one night skipped town with all his equipment and a $3,000 car he hadn't paid for. Investigators searched for the doctor, but they never found him. They did discover, though, that he never actually held a license to practice medicine. Best was liable to see a murder or a burglary any night of the week, but one instance in particular left its mark. One November night in 1926, the Santa Rita Hotel held a dance. A young machinist named W.L. Coates showed up, reportedly on the heels of some heavy drinking, and asked a woman to dance. She refused. He asked again. She refused again, and he started to make a scene. A town constable named George Hayes threw Coates out of the dance with help of a local driller named C.A. Jones. But at about 11:30, Coates came back. Clayton Williams was an engineer in the area at the time. Here's how he remembered what happened next, writing about the event years later.
"He walked up to Deputy Sheriff Hayes, standing in the middle of the floor, and shot him in the ear. Turning to C.A. Jones, he said, 'You too, yes, O.B.'"
Jones was shot in the arm and survived. Hayes died at the scene. Coates then left the hotel, and on his way out, he encountered Alta Beam, a local telephone operator.
"She screamed, and he turned and fired upon her. After she fell, he stood over her and emptied the gun."
Coates escaped. A couple days later, they found him dead in his room. So what is Best these days? Its population reached 3,500 in 1925, but dwindled to less than 300 20 years later. As oil production in the area declined, there wasn't much reason to stay in Best. Now, it's empty. Along with some broken glass, rusted cans, there's only one building left.
Well, here it is. The last standing structure of the town of Best. You know, the scrub has just taken back everything, except for this jail.
It's a square concrete box, about 10 feet high. The inside is filled with dirt and graffiti. And it felt strange to be inside, knowing that there were once people here. Drunks, thieves, murderers. But then again, for the town with the best name and the worst reputation, maybe it's fitting for the jail to be the only thing standing. In Best, I'm Michael Marks.
Should be partly cloudy skies in store for us this evening. A cool low around 47 later tonight. Tomorrow brings in most of the cloudy skies, a 50% chance for showers with a high near 57. It's 6:30. This is KERA News.